Welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm joined now by Sara Ayesh, a climate and oil campaigner at Greenpeace UK, the founder of Transition Dartmouth Park and a social reporter for the Transition Network. She's currently working on Greenpeace's Save the Arctic campaign, which aims to prevent oil drilling and industrial fishing in the Arctic by having the region recognised as a world park. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sara Ayesh.
Hi, Toby. Nice to be here.
Now, you say nice to be here, but I realise times are very tough for Greenpeace at the moment, specifically in the Arctic. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yes, we've obviously been running a campaign for about a year and a half called Save the Arctic, where we're aiming to get the area around the North Pole recognised as a global sanctuary and to prevent oil drilling, which would be hugely destructive for this pristine and beautiful region. The Russian oil company Gazprom are going to be the first to extract the first drops of oil actually in the Russian Arctic. They're about to do that very soon. Nearly a month ago, our ship, the Arctic Sunrise, went up there to make a peaceful protest against the oil drilling, which we feel could be catastrophic if there were spills. And what happened was they began this peaceful protest, and the Coast Guard in the area behaved very aggressively towards them. They were climbing up the oil rig. The Coast Guard, you know, pulled them down, fired warning shots towards them, fired shots in the water, and threatened them with knives. 24 hours later, FSB, which is Russian Security Service, officers landed on the deck of our ship while it was travelling in international waters, and basically forced everyone onto the deck at gunpoint. Our protesters, which can be seen in the photos, had their hands up. They behaved peacefully at all times. They were entirely unarmed, and the FSB officers were very heavily armed. They seized our ship. They took it back to Murmansk, which is a Russian Arctic port. And since then, for the last 28 days, the 28 activists who are on board the ship and the two journalists who were with them, a photographer and a videographer, have been held in prison in Murmansk, and all 30 of them are charged with piracy. Piracy is a violent crime which carries 15 years maximum in jail. These are protesters who were peaceful, who were acting for the good of the world, who were acting not for personal gain, and we're demanding their immediate release.
I also read that the Russians claim to have found illegal drugs on board.
Yes, we absolutely deny that claim. There was morphine on board, which is part of a legally required medical kit. It was a Dutch ship, and the Dutch regulations demand that there is a medical kit on board, so we were abiding by those regulations. The last port that the ship was in before it was seized by the Russian security was Norway. And before it left Norway, the ship was searched for drugs, including the use of sniffer dogs. Nothing was found, and the Norwegian authorities have released documentation backing that claim up.
And in terms of what happens next, what is Greenpeace doing, and what have been the reactions from family members, from other non-government organisations, from governments and so on? Let's start with you guys. What are you up to in response to this?
So we're doing everything we can all over the world to try and use legal means to get the release of our peaceful colleagues and friends. We've held global days of solidarity all over the world, vigils at embassies, protests in town squares, protests at football games that are sponsored by the oil company in question, Gazprom. We have a petition all over the world on our website asking people to email their national Russian embassy, which is at nearly 1.5 million people in the last 28 days have signed that petition. And we're also asking all of the governments, the people on board were from 18 different countries. So we're asking our governments to provide consular assistance to those people. Their families, obviously, we're all really worried about them. Their families are. They're not being kept in very good conditions. They've described cold cells, solitary confinement, being locked up 23 hours a day. So, yes, we're very worried about them.
And what's your next tactic? What will you try to do? Or are you in a holding moment when you wait and see what happens legally?
Well, they've been charged with piracy, and we're obviously waiting to hear the results of the investigation, whether those charges will be continued or whether they'll be dropped. We've had a lot of support from many other NGOs around the world and other actors in civil society. Today, the Mothers of the Disappeared group in Argentina wrote a letter to President Putin. I know the grandson of Gandhi has spoken out about the need for a peaceful protest. Today, German Chancellor Angela Merkel personally telephoned Putin to ask for the release, to ask for a quick resolution to this matter. President Putin himself has publicly said that the protesters are not pirates. So we just really hope that the investigative committee releases them as soon as possible.
It's indeed an awful situation. It must be very difficult. Now, I happen to know that you have spent time on this ship. I wonder if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about what goes on there and what it does and what life is like on the Arctic Sunrise.
Absolutely. I was there. I was on the Arctic Sunrise a year ago. It's a ship that Greenpeace has had, I think, for about 20 years. We actually bought it under a different name from a company that had previously used it as a seal hunting ship. They didn't want to sell it to us, so we bought it under a different name other than Greenpeace and transformed it into what we now know as the Arctic Sunrise. I was there visiting the Arctic at the time of the sea ice minimum, which is the time in the year where the ice that is melting in the Arctic melts to its lowest point of the year. Last year, it melted to its lowest ever point, and we took scientists and journalists up there to bear witness to it and to conduct scientific research. And because I've been on that ship, I know it well. I know some of the crew who are traveling on it too. I sailed with them last year. It can hold about 30 people, and obviously over a trip, you become friends with people. You find out about their lives, the places they're from. It's a really wonderful environment to be with people who are from all around the world who really just want to make a difference. The ship is also used for protests for our campaigns. So it's been used for oceans campaigns. This spring, it did a tour of France and the UK where it supported sustainable fishermen and highlighted their struggle against the huge industrial fishing companies to keep their livelihoods.
I'm speaking with Sarah.
Yeah, and I know this shit well, and it feels personal to me.
I can well imagine. I'm speaking with Sarah Ayesh, a climate and oil campaigner at Greenpeace UK, who is also founder of Transition Dartmouth Park and a social reporter for the Transition Network. She currently works on Greenpeace's Save the Arctic campaign, which aims to prevent oil drilling and industrial fishing in the Arctic by having the region recognised as a world park. In terms of the World Park campaign, Sarah, could you tell us a little bit about what that would mean? It's actually not an expression I'm familiar with, I must admit.
Yeah, so basically, it's not the whole of the Arctic. Much of the Arctic belongs to the countries that border it, and 4 million people live in different parts of the Arctic. What our campaign is about is specifically the area around the North Pole, what's known as the High Arctic, which is the area that belongs to nobody. And we're asking for it to be made a global sanctuary, much like the one in Antarctica, which we campaigned for and won 15 years ago, where the area can't be exploited, where there's an international treaty where the area cannot be exploited for industrial purposes and can't be destroyed by oil drilling, which would inevitably cause, because of the inhospitable conditions there and the weather and the ice, if there were oil spills there, which would be likely, it would be impossible to clean up, and it would destroy the unique wildlife such as polar bears and narwhals that live there.
And of course, to get that status of a world park, is that something that comes through the United Nations?
It could potentially come a number of different ways, and the sorts of things we're doing at the moment are talking to individual Arctic nations. The Arctic nations have a body called the Arctic Council, which currently makes policy for the region. Finland was the first country a couple of months ago to come out and say that they supported the idea of a sanctuary around the North Pole. So what we're trying to do at the moment is build on that, work with other countries, ask people to lobby their governments, and it may be one treaty, it may be a series of bilateral treaties in the end.
Right, and then they amount to the idea of a world park because you have a mixture of multilateral arrangements and bilateral agreements and so forth. Yeah, very, very complicated patchwork of policy innovations that is necessary, I guess, to create, right? It's a long, slow burn.
Absolutely. And I think our focus on the moment at the moment is making the campaign as big and as well known as possible. Over 4 million people have signed up to it around the world so far, and we want world leaders to know that everybody in the world cares about the Arctic. It's going to affect everybody in the world if it's destroyed. The melting ice is already, scientists have said, affecting our weather systems. And so for leaders to recognise this and for them to take action, it's important that as many people as possible around the world are on board with this.
And it's only, last week or the week before, I think, we had the latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, this body of eminent experts that operates through the United Nations, and they seem yet again to be giving us indisputable proof of the reality of climate change and the specificities of what that means for an area like the Arctic, right?
Absolutely, and a really clear message from the IPCC was that really we need to switch to renewable forms of energy. We need to start leaving fossil fuels in the ground. Arctic oil is very economically marginal. It's the last oil you would go and get. It's not going to come on stream in any kind of a big way for a very long time, well beyond the time where we should really still be using fossil fuels. And therefore, it just seems like madness that big oil companies like Shell and like Gazprom are leading this Arctic oil rush, spending billions of pounds, and they risk wrecking the region for what is only actually an estimated 3 years global oil supply.
It seems like an extraordinary thing to be doing, and yet they are doing it. How do you read the Russian mentality on this?
In terms of oil drilling, it's not just a Russian mentality. I mean, Shell tried to drill last year in Alaska, and although they broke both their oil rigs and their oil spill response equipment, they're now fixing it. We don't know if it will be fixed by next year, but they've publicly said that they plan to go back to Alaska. Russian oil companies like Gazprom and Rosneft are making deals with Western oil companies like BP and Shell. Shell are currently considering a partnership with Gazprom, the company in this case that seems to be putting the pressure on for the Arctic 30 to be detained in Russia in this way. So I think it's not just a Russian mentality. It's a big oil business mentality, and I guess it kind of raises a lot of questions about how far they will go, like how much they're going to disregard safety, how much they're going to disregard wildlife, and what a company like Shell would do next year if they had that partnership going with Gazprom and the same sort of protest happened. You know, would they like willingly see people locked up for that?
Sure. And you mentioned the expression the Arctic 30. I wonder if you've given us an idea of what that means. But this is the term that's being used to describe the 28 Greenpeace workers, activists, volunteers, and the two journalists who were on the Arctic Sunrise and have been placed under arrest by the Russian authorities, yeah, the Arctic 30. So for those people who may be listening who are unfamiliar with the story up to now, it hasn't got that much coverage here in the US. How can they participate in terms of the two petitions you mentioned? First of all, the petition about the Arctic 30, or the Greenpeace Arctic 30, as they're sometimes called, and secondly, the petition about turning the Arctic into a world park.
So anybody listening can go to savethearctic.org, which is the global website, and both petitions are on that website, or you can go to the US Greenpeace website, and both petitions are on that website as well. And the full story of the Arctic 30, all of the individuals that were on there, two of whom are US citizens, are also on those websites. And then, like, one of the most, I guess, interesting people on the ship, Captain Peter Wilcox, he's a US citizen. He's been working for Greenpeace for over 25 years. And he was also the captain of our former ship, the Rainbow Warrior, when it was bombed by French secret agents in New Zealand in 1985. He survived that bombing. One of the crew was killed in it. And he went on, he continued being part of Greenpeace campaigns. He continued being a captain of Greenpeace ships. And now he's one of the Arctic 30 locked in a jail cell in Russia.
Quite a story. A tragedy, but one that isn't over yet, and many struggles to come. Sara, one of the things that I gather Greenpeace is engaging in right now is that this Friday there's going to be a particular event. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, Friday will mark the 30th day since the Arctic 30 were detained in Russia, since the ship was seized by the Russian Coast Guard. So it will be the 30th day that they spend in detention. And we're going to mark that all over the world with a global day of solidarity. We held a global day of solidarity about 10 days ago, and it was we had a really amazing response. It happened in over 200 locations around the world. In London, there were about 1,000 people, including celebrities. And it happened in 24 places across the UK. I know that it also happened in several locations in America, including Washington and Los Angeles and San Francisco. This Friday, we'll have another day of action, which so far I think is happening in 45 countries around the world. And it will be a variety of things. It will be things highlighting the fact that it's 30 people and it's 30 days. In London, we're having a candlelit vigil, and I believe there will also be events happening in the US.
Well, that sounds very spectacular, and it needs to be in the context of this appalling infringement of human rights. Do you have
Absolutely. This week alone, all of the Arctic 30, the 28 activists and the two journalists have been appearing in court requesting bail and have been refused bail. All of them so far who've appeared in court have been refused bail. The protesters, they pose no threat to anybody, and the organisation has, you know, offered a guarantee of our chief executive, has offered to move to Russia in order to offer himself as a personal guarantee if they are released, and that has been rejected.
And Sara, how can people find out about the Global Day of Solidarity and Action?
Well, different sorts of things are happening in different places. What I would recommend is that wherever you are, you go on to the Greenpeace USA website or the SaveTheArctic.org website, and you can take action by signing the petition to the Russian embassy. And if you follow any of the Greenpeace Facebook pages, there'll be a series of things that we ask you to do to share this action with your friends and at various times to join these days of solidarity.
Can't think of a better thing to be doing. Sara Ayesh, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Sara Ayesh, a climate and oil campaigner at Greenpeace UK, the founder of Transition Dartmouth Park, and a social reporter for the Transition Network. She's currently working on Greenpeace's Save the Arctic campaign, which aims to prevent oil drilling and industrial fishing in the Arctic by having the region recognised as a world park. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Toby Miller, sitting in for Ian Masters. He'll be back next Monday. The programme is available at ianmasters.com. I'll return tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Thanks to Graham Fitzgibbon in the soundproof booth for production services, and bye for now. One more light goes out in the